Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com. Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Julian Marshall, sitting in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. As U.S. forces close in on Saddam Hussein, a tough choice looms. What to do with Saddam Hussein if the United States military tracks him down? Tonight On Point, Saddam Hussein, execute or prosecute? We begin with the latest developments in Baghdad, where today a powerful car bomb exploded outside the Jordanian embassy, killing 11, including four Iraqi policemen, and wounding at least 50. New York Times reporter Robert Worth is in Baghdad. I asked him to describe the scene on the ground.
Well, the bomb exploded in a car. It looks like someone was in the car and had gotten out of it. It happened about 10:30 a.m. It exploded and knocked about a 20-foot-wide U-shaped hole in the wall of the embassy. Military people in Baghdad said that the embassy itself did not sustain serious structural damage, but obviously the outside was seriously damaged. It looks now like no Jordanians were killed. And as you know, also today, two U.S. soldiers were wounded in an attack in Karada, which is in downtown Baghdad, when a homemade bomb struck them and a gunfight broke out afterwards.
Is anybody talking, Robert, about the motive of the attackers on the Jordanian embassy? It occurs to me they could be either supporters or opponents of Saddam.
Exactly. There's always people talking about these motives, but at this point nobody really knows why. There was talk about the possibility that this might be because of Jordan having accepted the daughters of Saddam Hussein last week. You know, the king of Jordan, Abdullah, gave sanctuary to those two daughters. But that's just a speculation. There are all kinds of other speculations. It's really too early to say why this happened.
But, of course, Jordan did provide bases for the U.S.-led attack on Iraq, didn't it?
Yeah. And there were some young men immediately after the explosion who ran through the hole in the wall, grabbed some pictures of King Abdullah from the embassy, and were smashing them up, and there was loud applause and whistling as they did that. But, of course, that kind of sentiment doesn't exactly give you a clear reason at all.
This is the first attack, is it, Robert, on a foreign embassy in Baghdad?
Yeah, so far as I know, since the war ended, it is indeed the first attack on a foreign embassy.
And is there a concern there amongst the U.S. Military of a broadening out of targets?
Yeah, I believe there is. I mean, you know, there's been some talk initially when the attacks against Americans were happening a couple of months ago. It was believed to be remnants of the regime, you know, Fred Bedain, Saddam, these kinds of people. But there's now more concern about the possibility that terrorists, possibly terrorists from other countries, are involved. And clearly, this is not aimed at U.S. soldiers. It seems to be a broadening out of the kinds of attacks going on here and a worry about where they're coming from.
But who was responsible for providing security at the Jordanian embassy? Would it have been the Jordanian military security officials, or was there a U.S. military presence there at the embassy?
There was no consistent U.S. military presence there. There were patrols in the area, but the Iraqi police were responsible for security at the embassy. And, in fact, Iraqi police, we were told, were the first people on the scene responding. And, as you know, four Iraqi policemen were right there and were among the eight that were killed.
Robert, many thanks for that.
All right, thank you.
Robert Worth is a reporter with the New York Times. He spoke to me from Baghdad. Saddam's capture is just a matter of time, as more Iraqis are giving information about his whereabouts since the death of his son, says America's top soldier, General Richard Myers. But as the hunt intensifies for the deposed dictator, there's little consensus on what to do if American troops find him. The Bush administration appears to be split. The State Department wants to jail him, but there are reports that the Pentagon prefers he be killed, in part to avoid an unpredictable trial that could stir up nationalist Arab sentiments. How important is it that Saddam is captured? How would you like to see it handled? Should he be treated in the same way as his sons or be arrested? Join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And joining me now from Reston, Virginia, is Milt Burden, a 30-year veteran of the CIA from 1964 to 1994 and co-author of The Main Enemy, The Inside Story of the CIA's Final Showdown with the KGB. Good evening, Mr. Burden.
Good evening, Julian. How are you?
I'm well. Could we start with the hunt for Saddam himself? The trial was getting very hot last month, the killing of Uday and Qusay, the arrest of some of Saddam's bodyguards, but it now appears to have gone rather cold.
Well, I don't know how hot it was or how cold it actually was. I have no doubts that we're going to track him down one of these days. I don't know how helpful it is for us to say that we're 2 hours behind or 4 hours behind it, so sometimes it sounds a little bit like saying, I almost won the lottery. I was one number off. I think we should just continue what we're doing, and then we one day will have Saddam Hussein and then be faced with the decision of what do we do when we have this compound surrounded or this area surrounded, and we know that Saddam is in there. That's the real issue.
That is the real issue, and what is your inclination?
My inclination is that we're going to watch this thing somehow be perceived as a debate over the death penalty. It is absolutely. It has nothing to do with that. It is a matter of what is good U.S. policy, what is going to advance the possibility that we succeed in Iraq. I would point out that the failure is just in no conditions acceptable, so we have to succeed. So I think we really must weigh each step that we take in Iraq against that, and the dealing with Saddam, just as dealing with the sons, will have an effect on that ultimate goal.
But would the capture of Saddam Hussein, in your opinion, rather than his killing, further advance U.S. policy in Iraq?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. And I think so basically because I think there's almost no evidence to support this conventional wisdom that we'll be shut of him and it'll be less of a nuisance or a problem for us if we kill him off. I don't think that's been the case with the sons. And it almost never the case. I think that in that part of the world, and I spend enough of my time living in the shadow of a mosque in one country or another, that dying often trumps how badly you might live. If you die well, and let's take the brothers, Qusay and Uday, and their son, the son Mustafa, if you're looking at it from the perspective of Iraqis who don't wish us well, the sons died. The deaths that will prompt people to write ballads. And Mustafa, the 14-year-old, will be probably the most popular name. And Jerry Bremer could probably check that out in the vital statistics over the next couple of months and see how many more Mustafas are than normal.
But the capture of Saddam Hussein would then bring with it the prospect of a trial, would it not?
Sure. I mean, there's no doubt. I mean, there has to be some sort of a trial, doesn't there?
Okay, let's bring in Michael Scardeville, National Security Analyst at the Heritage Foundation in Washington, D.C. Good evening to you, Mr. Scardeville.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. Now, Saddam Hussein, should he be captured or killed?
Well, I think that if we can capture him in a peaceful fashion, that is great. Then the Iraqis can try him for all of the crimes that he has initiated upon them. But I don't think that we should necessarily go through extraordinary measures to try and bring about that capture as opposed to another solution. If when we hopefully eventually interdict him, there's a major firefight, and if the only solution is to result in his death, well, then so be it. I mean, I think that the long-term impact of some final solution for him is the most important thing. If we go and he's willing to surrender and give himself up, there isn't a major firefight, or if there is some way to take him without going to extraordinary measures, personally, I think that would be great. Then the Iraqis can actually try him. You can have a system of rule of law be developed through this kind of war crimes trial, and you can have them provide justice. And it would have, I think, a greater impact if they handled the situation from there. But again, I think it all depends on the situation when we finally have him cornered.
But you tend to the view that we should try, American forces should try to capture Saddam Hussein, but if that process imperils in any way the lives of American soldiers, he should be killed.
Well, I think I don't think he should be labeled as a specific target for death. That's not what the United States military does. I think it should all depend on the situation when we finally interdict him. If we interdict him in a way that we can capture him in a relatively peaceful fashion, I think that would be a great solution. However, if the military situation on the ground does not allow for that or does not make that practical, I think the consequences of having, you know, 100 or 200 U.S. soldiers killed to try and bring about a capture that might then facilitate his escape would not be worth the cost. I think at the end of the day, the result's the same. I seriously doubt the Iraqi people, if he's put on trial by an Iraqi tribunal, are going to acquit this guy. I mean, they know better than anybody else the atrocities he's committed against them.
Milt Burden, in many ways, the fate of Saddam Hussein lies in the hands of the man himself, whether or not he decides to resist arrest.
That's right. And my sense is that he'll play that final act of his life in a way that might surprise us. He might go out guns blazing, but he also might surprise us. He may, with his vanity and his ego, want that last stage appearance in life. And so, you know, who knows how he's going to play this thing at the end. I agree, we don't want to lose, you know, a couple of hundred fine soldiers trying to take him down. But I think that I reflect back for a moment on that excellent briefing by General Sanchez after the sons were taken down. And then you play it back again, and you play it as if you were a supporter of those who wish us harm in Iraq, and you hear that it took over 200 American soldiers and helicopters and anti-tank weapons against these guys, and it really does play into their hands to create new heroes. When I think you put Saddam in an ill-fitting orange jumpsuit and shave his head and don't violate you know Geneva Conventions with a perp walk, but I mean the word gets out that he's in jail, and I think these guys in jail are more quickly forgotten than if they've been martyred in the eyes of their countrymen. We had an experience here recently. The killer of the CIA employees, Mira Malkansi, was tried, convicted, and executed. There was due process, but then his body was taken back to Quetta in Pakistan, and his death turned him into a hero whose reach was so far beyond what this thug's reach might have been in life. The tribals poured out in numbers that shocked everybody in that rough and ready Baluchistan province of Pakistan.
Let me just put that point to Michael Scardaville, that Saddam Hussein dead is more likely to be a martyr than Saddam Hussein in custody.
Well, I think in both cases it all depends on how. There is certainly the possibility that if he's taken out in a major firefight where we have to commit a large number of forces, that he might. But there's also a great possibility that if he's captured and handled in the wrong way, that he also might be viewed as a martyr. For example, you look at Slobodan Milosevic in front of the International Criminal Tribunal for Yugoslavia. I mean, this guy has, on a number of occasions, really riled public opinion there. I know a couple of people who were in the opposition that helped overthrow him, people who were imprisoned by Milosevic, beaten by his secret police, and they would tell me that when he gets up in front of that tribunal, they can't help feel somewhat sympathetic. That scares me, particularly now when we're looking at another dictator who is in some ways even more vicious And if the entire Middle Eastern region gets motivated in the same way, I'd be terrified. So in both cases, it all depends on the situation. I don't think we can make cookie-cutter observations here that, yes, death is better than capture in all circumstances. If he winds up in front of the ICC, the International Criminal Court, or some other kind of international tribunal, or even a tribunal of the coalition, I think...
Michael Scardeville, I'm sorry, we must take a break. Michael Scardeville, National Security Analyst at the Heritage Foundation. I'm also speaking to Milt Bearden, a 30-year veteran of the CIA. We're talking about the growing debate over what to do with Saddam Hussein if he's tracked down. This is On Point. On Point, I'm Julian Marshall, sitting in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about whether Saddam should be killed or captured if U.S. troops find him. What is justice for the deposed dictator? Did seeing the pictures of Saddam's dead sons change the way you think about what should be done with their father? Is taking Saddam alive the right and just thing to do? You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're talking with Milt Bearden, a 30-year veteran of the CIA and co-author of The Main Enemy, The Inside Story of the CIA's Final Showdown with the KGB, and with Michael Scardeville, National Security Analyst at the Heritage Foundation. And let's take a call. Paul is phoning from Boston. What would you like to say, Paul?
Yes, good evening. Thank you for taking my call. I think the best thing that could happen to the American people and the American government is that there's a firefight in which Saddam Hussein is killed. However we need to dress it, whether it's an assassination or simply a firefight in which he's killed, if he's tried, I think the American government, the American policies, that's what will be on trial, not Saddam Hussein. The American government will be on trial again. We've lost so much credibility. I, for one, didn't support the war. I certainly support our soldiers, but I don't believe that it helps the American people or the government. And I think George Bush and his administration fully understand that they cannot have this man survive and go through trial without his own administration being put on trial. So I think we all fare much better if the man is killed, whether intentionally or accidentally.
Milt Bearden, a trial for Saddam Hussein could result in the Bush administration being put on trial.
Well, that's probably, you know, that issue will come one way or the other. I mean, whether figuratively that the Bush administration will be on trial. I don't think that whether Saddam Hussein goes to trial or is killed outright will alter the fact that the world public opinion one way will do us, and I'm not sure that the trial of Saddam Hussein offers a venue that wouldn't be otherwise available to those who have doubts about our policy. I don't disagree with your caller that, you know, if there's a neat, quick way, he's all of a sudden today dead, yesterday alive, and the word is out, yes, he's dead. He's been buried at an unknown location. That would probably play well too. But what I worry about is the martyrdom thing coming in, to where people will finally, women will creep up to his grave and steal pinches of earth and possibly feed it to their pregnant daughters so that the coming son will be strong like Saddam. I mean, there's just a lot of stuff goes on over there. Again, I don't want to let this get into a death penalty versus non-death penalty discussion. It's what works for the U.S. We're there. We have to succeed. That's my point.
Michael Scardeville, if Saddam Hussein is killed resisting arrest reportedly, there will always be, will there not, a certain ambiguity about his death?
Well, I think either way you run a degree of risk about martyrdom. If he's killed, what was just mentioned is entirely possible. If he sits in prison for 60 years, a parallel concern is absolutely possible, with people becoming to view him as a martyr in prison, if you will, as opposed to a martyr who's been killed. And you might even wind up seeing in the future then terrorist attacks that are based on Free Saddam and movements and the like, of the whole political action that says that it builds around Saddam Hussein's imprisonment. That's why I think, regardless of what the situation is, how it's handled is so important. when your caller called in and said, from the U.S. perspective, it would be nicer if he was killed versus went on trial, because he would try and put the Bush administration and likely every administration since Reagan's policy on trial. He's probably right. That's exactly what Slobodan Milosevic has tried to do in front of the ICTY. Now, that's not going to affect his eventual conviction, which is likely. But it does send a major message to people in Serbia who feel that they were wronged by NATO.
Okay, let's take a call from Chris in Everett, Massachusetts. Chris, good evening. What do you want to say?
Good evening, Julian. I just wanted to say that I believe that they should try to take Saddam alive and put him on trial in front of an international court for kind of just the reason that your last speaker was saying, that I think you need to kind of prove to the international community that he's done wrong and he needs to be punished for what he's done wrong. And just killing him is not the way that we do things in a modern society. We're supposed to prove that they're wrong and try him for that. And the onus is on the prosecutors to bring evidence forward and say that he's done wrong things and he needs to be tried for that. I don't see that, if not at all costs, but at a reasonable cost, certainly you should try to take him alive rather than just kill him. I don't think killing his sons or killing him does really any good. It does make them a martyr.
Michael Scarterville, justice needs to be seen to be done.
Well, at the end of the day, any justice program afterwards should be judged by its impact on the population, not on the prison sentence or whatever kind of sentence is given to the leader who's brought before that tribunal. You know, you talk about international institutions and their role in all this. I find it interesting that people have sought to bring Tommy Franks in front of the ICC, yet there's no indictment in front of the ICC for Saddam Hussein. That really makes me question the credibility of that institution. If you look back historically at international tribunals, they really have not been particularly effective, with the exception of Nuremberg. You can go back to trials to try Napoleon, and they didn't work. So I think international tribunals are not the best solution here. I don't think a tribunal run by the coalition is the best solution either. I think this is the kind of thing that we need to, if he is actually captured, leave to the Iraqi people with assistance from the United States and the international community to help them develop a system based on rule of law where they can handle serious crimes like this. It would offer a number of benefits. One, it would not be seen as a skewed Western victor's justice against Saddam Hussein. It could be run by the Iraqi people. And much more importantly than that, it could, if done correctly, lead to a long-term development of a system based on rule of law in Iraq, which would help prevent the rise of another dictator like Saddam Hussein. And at the end of the day, what we're most concerned about and why we went to war in Iraq was to try and promote stability in that region and to prevent geostrategic threats like Saddam Hussein from becoming dominant.
Okay, Michael Scarterville, we'll develop that idea of what kind of trial Saddam Hussein should have in a moment. But firstly, a point to Milt Bearden. You've been talking about the advancement of U.S. policy in Iraq, the danger of Saddam Hussein becoming a martyr. But what do you think would be the most satisfactory way of ending Iraqi resistance to the U.S. and British military presence in Iraq by killing or capturing Saddam Hussein?
I think that's the trickiest of all the questions, because we seem to have had an element that became conventional wisdom that if we just kill these bad people, then those who are resisting us will lay down their weapons. I mean, it's as if we are convinced that those who are resisting us today are doing it only for these leaders. I think that might be dangerous in terms of policy. It's like suggesting that the Viet Cong may have been fighting for Ho Chi Minh. The only people that were chanting Ho Chi Minh's name were on American campuses in the 60s and 70s. I don't know that I believe those who are causing us the trouble are doing it for their beloved and respected leader. I think that they may be doing it, some of them, because we're there. And that makes it tricky. And we'll have to deal with something that we're pretty unaccustomed to in the last half century is being an occupying power.
Okay, well, let's just bring into the conversation now Gilbert Merritt. He joins us from Nashville, Tennessee. Mr. Merritt is a circuit judge for the U.S. Court of Appeals Sixth Circuit, and he's just back from 7 weeks in Iraq advising the Pentagon on setting up a judicial system. Welcome to you, Mr. Merritt. And as a judge, I should think there's little doubt where you stand in this debate as to whether Saddam Hussein should be captured or killed.
No, there's no doubt as a judge under our Constitution and under international law, I think we're obligated to try to try him if we can.
And what sort of trial do you believe Saddam Hussein should have? A trial by Iraqis, a trial by U.S. military court, or should he go before an international court?
I think he should be tried by Iraqis with some assistance, some advisors from the international community who can assist in answering questions of Iraqi judges if they have questions, and can assist in setting up the trials or the trial. First place, Saddam Hussein has violated Iraqi law in all kinds of ways, as well as international law. And I think it would be well, and a vote of confidence in the Iraqi judiciary, the Iraqi people, to try Saddam Hussein, plus the fact that it would be a lot less time-consuming and more efficient, wouldn't have to translate it into as many languages as you do for international trials, and wouldn't take as long as the Milosevic trial and others have taken. So I think, by and large, it would be best. The best argument is to have him tried in Iraq by an Iraqi judiciary.
Well, we got Arto calling from Ontario, Canada. And, Arto, I think that you tend to agree with Gilbert Merritt.
Yes, I just thank you for the opportunity to give me. I just may want to make a comment of this conversation about Saddam's capture and the rest of his cabinet. I'm just saying, like, America, why is just making all these mistakes all the time? Like, he's been doing it for years, and he knows, America knows Saddam has been doing wrong in Iraq for 35 years. And America knows about most of Saddam's, wrong he's been doing in Iraq. But what my question here is just, I'm trying to say, should America should capture Saddam and all his cabinet and give them to Iraqian people's hand, like give them to the population, to the people, to trial them to whatever they want to do with them, because Saddam has been killing everybody, like in every family in Iraq, he's been killing at least one member in Iraqian families. So that's my question. I'm hoping for if America would be able one day capture Saddam and give Saddam, like, to Iraq and his hand, the people, whatever want to do with them, they do. They decide. Because if America put them in the trial, and there shouldn't be anything happen to Saddam, and will be alive forever, and America will feed him, and America will give him another power again.
Okay, Arto, well, thanks for that. Not so much a question, more a statement there that Iraqis should be responsible for trying Saddam Hussein. Milt Bearden, though, do you think he also, Saddam Hussein, has a case to answer for the deaths of American soldiers, especially since those of those killed since President Bush declared an end to major combat operations?
Well, that's sort of a unilateral declaration. I think that the judge would be able to comment on that. I don't think, as a fine point of law, one wouldn't seize upon that as something we could possibly prosecute. I like the idea of somehow the Iraqis trying him for crimes against the Iraqi people. But one wonders if, will Islam kick in? Will the majority Shia want to try him under perhaps some sort of Islamic law? How will that dovetail or match up with our own approach to law as well, or other international law? There are a lot of things that I think need to be thought through probably now, and I'm sure they are being thought through.
Okay, well, let's put that to Gilbert Merritt. What sort of judicial system is shaping up in Iraq?
Well, Iraq, before Saddam Hussein, had a good judicial system with a criminal code, very much like criminal codes in Western Europe. It was a civil law type of arrangement. And when Saddam Hussein came in, the judiciary remained in place much as it was, except that he put it under his attorney general or his minister of justice. And he tried to make the Iraqi judiciary part of the Saddam Hussein administration, but there was a great deal of resistance on the part of the judges who remained in place, and some of them were dismissed. Some went to jail, and some remained, but they fought a rear guard action, trying as best they could under difficult circumstances to maintain judicial independence.
But the system that is currently taking shape now in Iraq, does it bear any relationship to the American system, the European system? Are there elements of Islamic law?
It bears a great deal of relationship to the civil law system in Europe, or the Napoleonic code system, which the Iraqis really adopted from Egypt. So that's the type of system they have, and it was a very sophisticated system. Now, however, the judiciary is not functioning, at least in its normal way. The judges are, the courthouses have been looted, and the judiciary is not up and running. It could be. This is not something that the Coalition Provisional Authority has given a great priority to. There have been other things that have been much more important in their eyes, and so they have not yet gotten the judiciary of Iraq up and running.
So if Saddam Hussein were captured tomorrow, there would be no provision inside Iraq at the moment to try him.
There would be no active judicial tribunal to try him, but the system could be put in place very quickly. The entire Iraqi judicial system could be put in place within 2 or 3 months. And without going into detail, the system that the Iraqis inherited during the period of the British mandate was a very good system, and it could be fairly quickly put back in place.
Gilbert Merritt, we must take a break there. That was Gilbert Merritt, circuit judge for the U.S. Court of Appeals, Sixth Circuit. He's just back from 7 weeks in Iraq advising the Pentagon on setting up a judicial system. We're also talking to Milt Bearden, a 30-year veteran of the CIA and co-author of The Main Enemy, the inside story of the CIA's final showdown with the KGB. And with Michael Scardeville, national security analyst at the Heritage Foundation. We're talking about what to do with Saddam Hussein if he's tracked down by U.S. troops. Prosecute or execute? How important is it to capture Saddam? What is justice? Do you worry that killing him would turn Saddam Hussein into a martyr? You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Julian Marshall, sitting in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Support for this is On Point. I'm Julian Marshall, sitting in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about if U.S. troops track down Saddam, should he be captured, dead or alive? What is gained by taking Saddam alive? Do you want to see him stand trial? Should this be a U.N. trial, a U.S. trial, one run by the Iraqis? You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're talking with Milt Bearden, a 30-year veteran of the CIA, with Michael Scardeville, national security analyst at the Heritage Foundation, and with Gilbert Merritt, circuit judge with the U.S. Court of Appeals Sixth Circuit, who was in Iraq advising on setting up a judicial system. Michael Scardeville, can I just resurrect the quandary over whether or not Saddam Hussein should be killed or captured? Can that really be a political decision, or is it inevitably a decision taken by military commanders on the ground?
Well, I think inevitably it's a situational decision. I think if politically we put down either a directive that he be captured at all costs or that he be killed at all costs, that would both would be counterproductive. I mean, there's certainly advantages to him being killed, and there's certainly risks. Likewise, with him captured and tried, and particularly if he's tried in inappropriate forum. So I think it's going to be dictated by the situation on the ground. If we find him and either he or whatever bodyguards or staff he has with him engage us in a major firefight, and he is killed as part of that process, that's going to, you know, that is going to be the case of the matter. If they raise the white flag and he comes out waving his hands above his head, he's going to be captured, and then we're going to have the question of what to do with him now, and who should he be tried by. So I think the two are linked, but the initial question of what should we do with him when we find him is going to be determined probably entirely by the situation under which he's found.
Okay, let's take a call from Marsha in Boston, Massachusetts. Good evening, Marsha.
Good evening. I just wanted to say that it seems to me as though the most important thing is to capture him, because if we don't capture him, people are going to think that it's our intention to decide who should be killed and who should live. And as a matter of fact, I don't agree with this, because I didn't know when the American government got into the business of assassination. That's never been a policy. And as a matter of fact, we've always steered clear of killing leaders of other countries. So I just don't think it's a good idea for us to do it for our own reasons. And it's definitely not a good idea, because it's just going to make these people even angrier with us.
Milt Burden, where do we stand on that at the moment? Saddam Hussein has been deposed. He's no longer the leader of Iraq, but he remains an elected head of state. Are U.S. Forces empowered in any way to kill him?
No, I would say that that's possibly out of the question. Now, there was an executive order written by President Ford when he took over from Richard Nixon, which made it illegal to assassinate any element of government. But you could hardly make the case that after we said did a kind of sort of a, you know, the bullhorn and said, all right, come out with your hands up, and then somebody empties a clip from inside the building, that would be assassination. So I don't think that would be an issue at all there. But it does keep coming back to, you know, the issue of what is good for U.S. policy in Iraq now that we are there. And I see all of us, the callers and those of us talking on the program here, are having difficulty with this. A good clean death and a quick burial, that's fine. Or maybe it's a trial, that's fine. I still tend to think that we're going to be better off with Saddam going through some sort of a judicial process. There's very little evidence. I mean, let's just flash back for a second. In our own culture, our heroes are always dead ones. I mean, it's Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, Jesse James, Bonnie and Clyde were thugs and common criminals, but their deaths catapulted them into the kind of the legendary consciousness of this country. If you take a look at, you know, Marilyn Monroe died young and Brigitte Bardot lived. Marilyn will live forever, and Brigitte Bardot becomes sillier and sillier in her advanced years. So, you have to take all of that into consideration, I think.
Gilbert Merritt, however desirable you believe a trial should be of Saddam Hussein, however much you try to perfect the judicial system in which he is tried, there is always going to be the danger that it'll be seen in the Arab world as a show trial?
Yes, I'm sure it will be, and to some extent it'll be true that it will be a show trial. The Arab world and probably much of the Western world will be focused on the trial, but it will be a terrific education for both the West and the East if it should occur.
Michael Scardaville, a lot could come out in that trial. Saddam Hussein could have a lot to say about the weapons of mass destruction and where the bodies are buried.
Well, certainly, and hopefully if he's captured, that kind of information will come out well before a trial, because the trial would hopefully be a public trial so the people of Iraq and the people of the world can see it. We wouldn't want him giving the GPS coordinates of where he's buried his weapons of mass destruction out on public TV. We'd want to get that information beforehand. That's certainly one of the advantages of capturing him versus killing him, is that you could potentially get that kind of intelligence. I think what we've concluded here between all of the callers and speakers is that there are certain advantages to capturing him and to trying him in the appropriate fashion. And there are advantages to killing him. Yeah, the situation is done. It's over.
Okay. Let's just take a quick call from Tim in Sheboygan, Wisconsin. Tim?
Good evening, Julian.
Good evening.
I have a point of information and then two options.
Okay. Well, just keep it brief, Tim, if you would.
The International Criminal Court that was mentioned, is that not the one that our administration refuses to support and participate in? And since we don't seem to have excellent other options, how about two more? One, just plain ambiguity, like bin Laden. Let's not have him killed. Let's not have him tried. Let's have him just vanish and not be heard of ever again. And last, if we do find ourselves with the information to encircle him, wouldn't it be possible for Iraqi forces to go do the apprehension and or firefight? Thank you.
Mill Bedden, if I could get you to reply to some of those options.
Well, I think that the second option is kind of interesting, isn't it? The first option, I'm not sure that bin Laden will ever go away. He's already kind of a legend, whether he's alive or dead today. But the second option, one would think that someone would already be training what you could of, American Iraqis, Iraqi, some few hundred people to get up to snuff to be thrown up against that situation when we say Saddam is in that villa. Let's go. I think that should be in there as well. That's a good idea.
Michael Scardaville, finally and briefly to you, whichever way it happens, kill or capture, will that bring closure?
Well, again, I think it all depends on the way. If we send him off to an ICC or to some other international tribunal where he can try and really just make fun of the international system and the coalition that has apprehended him, I think we run a lot of risks. If we allow the Iraqi people to handle his own trial, and we support them in that endeavor, I think that we will do a great service to destroying his reputation, as well as to building rule of law in Iraq to make sure that a future Saddam Hussein doesn't arise.
Michael Scardaville, many thanks for being with us. Michael Scardaville, National Security Analyst at the Heritage Foundation. Thanks to you, too, Milt Bearden, a 30-year veteran of the CIA and co-author of The Main Enemy, The Inside Story, the CIA's Final Showdown with the KGB. And thanks to you, too, Gilbert Merritt, Circuit Judge with the U.S. Court of Appeals Sixth Circuit, who was in Iraq advising on setting up a judicial system. You can continue the conversation online at onpointradio.org. Click on forums. In a moment, Al Gore delivers a scathing critique of President Bush. This is On Point. Al Gore stepped back into the spotlight today to deliver a blistering speech criticizing George W. Bush. The speech has fueled speculation that the former vice president will enter the 2004 race. On Wednesday, former New York Governor Mario Cuomo urged Gore to run, but Gore says he has not reconsidered his decision to stay out of the race. In today's speech, he assailed Bush on several fronts, challenging the president's honesty and saying his ideology, and I quote, has seriously divided America. Here's more of what Al Gore had to say.
The direction in which our nation is being led now is deeply troubling to me, not only in Iraq, but also here at home, on economic policy, social policy, and environmental policy. Millions of Americans now share a feeling that something pretty basic has gone wrong in our country, and that some important American values are being placed at risk, and they want to set it right. The way we went to war in Iraq illustrates this larger problem. Normally, we Americans lay the facts on the table and talk through the choices before us and make a decision. But that didn't really happen with this war, not the way it should have. I'm convinced that one of the reasons we did not have a better public debate before the Iraq War started is because so many of the impressions that the majority of the country had back then turn out to have been completely wrong. And it's not just in foreign policy, because the same thing has been happening in economic policy, where we've also now got another huge and threatening mess on our hands. I'm convinced one reason we've had so many nasty surprises in our economy is that the country somehow got lots of false impressions about what we could expect from the big tax cuts that were enacted, including, one, the tax cuts would unleash a lot of new investment that would create lots of new jobs. Unfortunately, here too, every single one of these impressions turned out to be wrong. Instead of creating jobs, for example, we are losing millions of jobs, 3 years in a row of net losses. That hasn't happened since the Great Depression. It seems obvious to me that big and important issues like the Bush economic policy and the first preemptive war in U.S. history should have been debated more thoroughly in the Congress and covered more extensively in the news media and better presented to the American people before our nation made such fateful choices. But that didn't happen. And now in both cases, reality is turning out to be very different from the impressions that were given when the votes and the die were cast. Earlier, I mentioned the feeling that many have that something basic has gone wrong. Whatever it is, I think it has a lot to do with the way we seek the truth and try in good faith to use facts as the basis for debates about our future, allowing for the unavoidable tendency we all have to get swept up in our enthusiasms. And that last point is worth highlighting. Robust debate in a democracy will almost always involve occasional rhetorical excesses and leaps of faith, and we're all used to that. I've even been guilty of it myself on occasion. But there is a big difference between that and a systematic effort to manipulate facts in service to a totalistic ideology that's felt to be more important than the mandates of basic honesty. And unfortunately, I think it is no longer possible to avoid the conclusion that what our country is now dealing with in the Bush presidency is the latter. The very idea of self-government from the days of ancient Greece, John, has depended upon honest and open debate as the preferred method for pursuing the truth, and a shared respect for the rule of reason as the best way to establish the truth. The Bush administration routinely shows disrespect for that whole basic process, and I think it's partly because they seem to feel as if they already know the truth and are not very curious to learn about any facts that might contradict what they believe they already know.
Former Vice President Al Gore speaking earlier today at New York University. I'm Julian Marshall, sitting in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Support for this program comes from Sophos Antivirus, protecting corporate IT networks worldwide.